It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And unfortunately, we start today with a little bit of talk about Yordano Ventura. Baseball, his family lost Ventura recently since the last time we talked. And we just kind of want to talk a little bit about what we remember about him. I mean, he was an exciting player. I saw Ventura in the Futures game in Kansas City in the first inning. He lit it up. One of the coolest atmospheres, probably the coolest atmosphere I've ever seen at a Futures game. And that will always be what I think of when I think of him as something even before he was in the majors. He was such an exciting pitcher. What do you think of when you think of Ventura, Fred?
Yeah, to me, he's was one of those like high upside kind of pitchers. And, you know, the breakout sadly never really happened, but it was one of those guys with the velocity that he could produce those radar gun readings. He's just so fun, and analyzing him from a fantasy perspective, you're just waiting for that season where with that high velocity, you know, he struck out 220 batters, and you felt like that could happen at some point if he could just harness everything. And this is the second time in less than 6 months we've gone through this with a really talented young pitcher, but obviously a huge tragedy, but yeah, he's definitely with someone who made one of those players who really makes fantasy baseball and baseball in general exciting.
Yeah, just a reminder again to really enjoy these guys, to enjoy the fun players, the guys who are fun to watch, and just take advantage of that opportunity to watch the guys that you love to watch play, because they really are a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think for me it was also a reminder, you know, these guys are real people with real lives and full lives outside of baseball, and that go good and bad at times. And, you know, to us they're almost like, especially without the popularization of baseball on television, you know, they're almost like actors on a stage and performers, and we talk about fantasy assets and all these things. But these guys, first and foremost, are real people with families and lives and everything that goes along with it.
So we will certainly miss Yordano Ventura. We will miss watching him pitch. We move from there with a little bit of an uncomfortable segue to some housekeeping. I want everybody to know that as we go forward, the Fantasy 411 will go back to a weekly show. Unless it's not possible, we will be coming to you on Thursdays going forward. We're really ramping up. By this time next week, MLB.com reporters, some of them will be in Florida and Arizona, and within 2 weeks, there will be people at camp, so it's definitely going to be that time. Coming out in 4 days from now, that will be Monday, the MLB.com Fantasy Player Preview will drop, and that is definitely something that Fred is very involved in. You got any hints, anything to look for, anything we should be excited about other than just a massive amount of information?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just such a cool project because it's something we start basically every day working on before the World Series even ends and all the way now through till opening day. And, you know, there's more than 800 players in it. It's got full previews and stats on everyone. And I think even for fantasy owners, when they first start looking at it, like, obviously good chance that Mike Trout will be at the top. I mean, he's going first in almost every draft. But then after that, there's some really tough debates, you know, Chris Bryant versus Jose Altuve and, you know, Manny Machado versus Josh Donaldson and all these things. Like, there are some pretty cool debates that we've been having, and we're excited now to share kind of with everyone, you know, the conclusions that we came to.
We move on, and there's been a good bit of news, and I think, you know, we get to this point in the winter, and it's almost more interesting fantasy news than the really big signings, because these are the kind of guys you have questions about. I mean, to some extent, you know, Jose Bautista, you know, maybe it's a question of round, but Jose Bautista is going to be on a team everywhere. These guys are some of the ones where it's kind of a question, and the circumstances maybe matter more. So we will start diving into some of these guys. And the first is Mark Trumbo returns to Baltimore. And your question to me was over under 40 home runs. And only because I just thought, I kind of feel like, not that it was a fluke at all, I think it was a career year for Trumbo last year. And so I think a little regression. And I think if you're giving me that number, I take the under. I still think he's very productive, but I just feel like he steps back, even returning to a comfortable situation. And I say that liking him more in Baltimore than nearly anywhere. I think we just saw Mark Trumbo's career year, and I don't want to draft and bid on a repeat of a career year. Do you like him more than that?
No, I would take the under on 40 homers also, but I would take the over on 35. So I'm kind of in that 37, 38 home runs. I think that'll push the RBI total down into the 90s, but could even be in the high 90s. I agree with you. I like him in Baltimore. I don't think we'll see 47 again from him, and I think that was the career year. But I'm comfortable saying high 30s. If I even look back to like his time with the Angels, he had a 32-homer season and a 34-homer season. If you had put him in an Orioles uniform in those two seasons and at Camden Yards, those totals probably would have been, you know, 35 or a little bit higher than that. So I think he is someone who could consistently produce home run totals in the high 30s, you know, for the next, at least the next couple of years. So I still think he's, you know, someone you pick in the first 10 rounds, but I guess I kind of view him the way major league teams did, because I don't think, based on the contract he got and how long he waited, that major league teams are expecting another 47 home run season either.
He's a lifetime 251 hitter. If I set that as your over-under, where are you for batting average for him?
I'll go over a little bit. His BABIP was a little low for him last year, and he still hit 256. And, you know, the previous year he hit 262. And so I'm gonna say I could see him hitting, you know, 255, 260, maybe if he gets fortunate in the 260s. But so I don't think he'll be a batting average drain, because 260 nowadays is totally fine. I think he's a solid power hitter. I mean, you don't get any speed. The 94 runs, I think, will be interesting to me. He scored 94 runs last year, and how close he can come to producing that, because he has the makeup of a guy who could be a little bit of a power hitter who doesn't score a lot of runs, but he did last year. I hope that total stays at least in the 80s.
I think that's a reasonable place. I think the batting average is a big part of the question on him, because if you figure him in the 250s, then, you know, I'm perfectly happy to live with 35 home runs. If you're talking 230, and he's been in that range, he was in that range in 13 and 14. If you're talking 230, then I'm a little – you still want the home runs. I'm not saying you avoid entirely, but if he starts hurting your batting average, then I really am a lot more comfortable if I really think I'm getting 40-plus home runs from him.
Yeah, I agree. I'm starting to feel fairly confident with his batting average that it can at least be okay. I'll give you a good maybe comparison of something I thought about. You mentioned Batista right as we were getting started here. Which one of those two, because they both recently, you know, went back to their teams, would you rather have Batista or Trumbo? Because I'm hearing a lot of people say they'd rather have Batista. I think I may rather take Trumbo, because I'm not sure if Batista's going to hit for average.
Yeah, I think I might be with you there. And look, to me, it comes down as much as anything to the age, because you know, Trumbo's still 31 this year. I mean, that's I really worry about Batista and decline. Something you pointed out, something that other people have pointed out. He's swinging and missing more, and that's worrisome. And so, you know, I think that one of the things we see with smart older hitters is that they will put fewer and fewer balls in play. They get more selective. The walks go up, and that's great. You know, that's a smart way to make up for whatever skill decline you might have. It is a smart baseball move, but those walks aren't helping you a whole lot in fantasy, and they start eating into home runs, RBI. So, you know, while I would rather have Bautista in my major league lineup, I think you make a good point. I really might rather have Trumbo on my fantasy team.
Yeah, and you alluded to the games played and the injuries, and I think that's partially, you know, why I might prefer Trumbo. Since 2011, he's played in more than 140 games in all but one season. And, you know, and as you said, he's still pretty close to his prime. So I think we can hopefully, I mean, you can't count on it for any player, but as much as any player, we can count on another 140, 550 games this season.
Yeah, I think that's completely reasonable. We now talk one of the other interesting moves of recent weeks, Greg Holland to the Rockies. It looks like he'll be the guy in the ninth, so we start by saying, how much do you like Greg Holland closing for Colorado?
Well, I usually am positive about these things, but I'm going to say not that much. I just, with him, the long layoff now, and we've seen really a wide variety of reports as far as his radar gun readings and what he's capable of. I mean, he's one of the players I think that we'll all be following the closest during spring training to see what he looks like. But with him, I'm not sure how well he's going to pitch. Colorado's a really tough place to pitch. The Rockies play a lot of really wide open games. They have rarely produced, I looked up in the history of their franchise, they've only produced, like, I think it was three seasons where a closer got more than 31 saves. So I think only three times they had a closer really have a very valuable season. So it hasn't happened much. kind of limits the upside. I don't know if I would take him in a 10 or a 12 team league, maybe at the end of a 15 team league. Are you more optimistic than I am?
I'm not, and really it comes down to one thing, and it's the walks. At his very best, he walked a few more guys than you would like from a guy at that level. When we're talking about Chapman, Kimbrel, those kind of elite guys, you know, he always walked a few more guys than you would want. His last year, 15, he walked a lot of guys, and that was even before the end. You know, he really kind of came unglued in the second half, and obviously missed a year. He was hurt. But even at the beginning of 15, he walked something like six guys in his first 10 innings. You can work around that in Kansas City, and you can work around that in the AL Central in a lot of those parks. You can't work around that in Denver. You put runners on base, you are going to pay. So to me, I will really have to see it, which means that somebody else is going to see the name and the role and beat me to him, and I'm fine with that. With that, is there anybody that interests you as a backup guy if it doesn't work with Holland in Denver?
Yeah, I was just about to ask you then, since we're both, since that's kind of two negative opinions on Holland, one from each of us. I think that I would be interested in taking Adam Ottavino in the last round of a draft, especially if that draft was now, and then hoping that maybe by opening day he just is their closer. Or even if I drafted later in March, maybe taking him and holding him for a couple weeks at the beginning of the season, I could see Ottavino becoming their closer. I don't think he would be an awesome mixed league closer, but I think he could be useful for the very last round pick, which I think you could get him in most mixed leagues. I might be interested. Like, would you consider him in the last round?
I'm absolutely with you there. I like the pitcher. I like that he has shown himself to be unfazed by Coors Field. You look at his 14. He was really good. The ERA was a little high, but was a good bit over a strikeout per inning. 16 walks in 65 innings. The occasional home run, but that's going to happen. But I like him. And look, I'll be honest here. I also like the guy. I covered Adam Ottavino. You know, I talked to him the day he was drafted in St. Louis, so I will admit I have a little bias here. But I like the pitcher a lot, and I think he you know, again, I think you're exactly where I am on him. I'm not gonna take him the way I would. 110 strikeout closer and waiting somewhere else. I certainly don't rate him like I would a Betances, for example. But as a hedge, yeah, I think he's a really interesting name. Speaking of Holland, he was a guy heavily mentioned with the Nationals for a lot of this offseason. After they missed out on Jansen and Chapman and Melanson, there was a lot of thought that he would be the guy that Washington would bring in to pitch the ninth. That didn't happen. They now bring in Joe Nathan. I mean, maybe, but it's still a pretty wide open. I think I still like Sean Kelly there, but honestly, the fact that they bring in Nathan to me means that right now, I'm not sure I'm picking anybody from that bullpen until I hear something clear, because if they hadn't brought anybody in, I'd say, you know what, seems pretty clear. Kelly emerges as the guy. He strikes out a lot of batters. I'm fine with that. Dusty likes his veterans. He knows Nathan, and I can very easily see Nathan coming out of spring training with that job, even if he doesn't hold it long. Is there somebody in that bullpen right now that you like maybe more than I do?
Oh, interesting. I kind of bypassed the Nathan. I just don't have any faith in him anymore, and I felt like this was almost like a shot in the dark by the Nats. You mentioned Sean Kelly. I guess I think he's still the favorite. I kind of like Blake Treinen. He doesn't have an awesome strikeout rate, but he gets a ton of ground balls. And I could see him, depending on how, you know, I guess Nathan fares in spring training and how Kelly fares in spring training. I think Trinan's an interesting guy, more of an NL-only guy. I don't think I would draft him at any point in a mixed league draft, but just kind of someone to keep an eye on. So I think we both feel like, even with Nathan there, that Kelly's still maybe the favorite. Would you rather have Kelly than any of those Rockies closers?
I think I would. I think, you know, from what we know now, yes, I would take him. And I think if you told me he's closing and you told me one guy was closing in Colorado, I would take Kelly over any of those Rockies pitchers. Even, in other words, if we get to opening day and you tell me Sean Kelly is the Nationals closer and you tell me the Rockies have named a closer, I don't care who it is. I want Kelly over that guy.
Yeah, I agree. The Nationals closer job is really interesting because typically when there's teams with a really unsettled bullpen at this point in the winter, they're kind of like the Reds and the, you know, the Phillies and the teams that are probably going to be at the back of the pack this season. The Nationals are interesting in that, you know, they can win the most games in baseball this year. I think they're one of the teams that could potentially do that. They could produce a 45-save closer if someone who is a good pitcher takes that job and runs with it. So it's a really interesting situation where if one of the best rosters in baseball with a closer, you know, that you can get after round 20 in a draft right now, Sean Kelly could end up being one of the biggest bargain picks, or whoever ends up being their closer. And looking at who the pitchers that are still out there as free agents, there's no one really they can bring in now who you would, if they signed him, unless they said this is our closer, if they brought in Sergio Romo or someone like that to compete, I don't think you'd automatically say, okay, he's going to win the job.
No, you wouldn't automatically. I just think every one of these guys, every time they bring in somebody with ninth inning experience, it makes me a little more nervous about what Dusty Baker is going to do.
Yeah, I agree. And, as I said even earlier with the Rockies, like, this is going to be one of the situations we're going to have to watch really closely during spring training.
Yep. Another bullpen move, Neftali Feliz to Milwaukee. He has been pretty good recently. He was pretty good last year, but I look at Feliz and I look at a guy who, since the start of 2014, has allowed 20 homers in 133 innings, and now he goes to a really home run friendly park, and I say maybe as my second or third closer, but that combination scares me. Do you see more reason for optimism than I do?
No, I would take the under on 20 saves for him this season for two reasons. One is performance-based. I've heard a lot of positive reports on him since the signing happened, from people saying the velocity was back up last season, and that was really encouraging. And I get that. And the strikeout rate was really high last year. But, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of home runs, plenty of walks. That's a really bad combination at Miller Park. I think he could lose the job at some point from his own performance. But then the flip side of that is that he's going well, and now we have a Brewers team that's not probably a contender this year with a pitcher on a reliever on a one-year contract who they can flip at the deadline. So I just feel like, and then if he gets flipped to a contender, does he go into the ninth inning? I think the odds are a little small on that. Now I'm looking way ahead, but I would be surprised if he gets 30 saves this year. I think 20's a more reasonable estimate. I would be surprised if on August 1st he's a closer.
So let's actually do a little bit of a strategic diversion here, because I always like talking a little bit of strategy beyond just the tactical looks at players. When you're doing something like the Fantasy Player Preview and you're talking about closers, you know, that's a real consideration. There are a lot of teams where I think that is a consideration. And so when you start ranking these guys, and you rank somebody like a Feliz, like a Jim Johnson in Atlanta, even a place like the Rays where, you know, they hope to compete. But when you talk about these teams where there's a very real chance of them selling at the deadline, and there's nothing that teams are going to sell more than a guy with saves, how much do you bake in that possibility with guys from those teams that they might lose 10 saves by being traded on July 31st?
Yeah, I mean, it means that you have to hedge your projections. I mean, I'm very statistical-based at this time of year as far as projecting them out, and you can confidently project 40 saves for a Kenley Jansen. Now, Alex Colome, for example, is a really good pitcher, but if you have concerns about him being traded and moved into a setup role, then you just can't go high-end on that projection and go 40 or 42 saves. You have to hedge your bets, but you can't confidently say 30 and that he's going to spend August and September as a setup man. So you have to bake that in your projection and have a projection of 37 saves, 36 saves, something like that, where you're kind of blending those two possible outcomes. Now, for a really good closer, if you think Alex Colome is going to be that awesome this year, then maybe it increases the chances that if he is traded to a contender, that he goes into that, like with Mark Melancon last year, was such a good closer that when he got traded, he just continued to be a closer, and it didn't impact his value at all. Whereas someone like Feliz, I have a hard time picturing, it could happen, but it's less likely that a contending team will say, okay, he's the guy we need to anchor our bullpen. He'd have to really be doing well. And so with him, I think you have to bake even more uncertainty into projections, and then you have to put that save total down into the 20s. So yeah, you have to weigh in all those possibilities. And almost that's the art of fantasy baseball projections. It's a science, but there's a lot of art there with feeling out the possibilities for the season. And it's the same even with guys who could lose their jobs to prospects and things like that. You have to bake in that possibility when you project out stats for them.
Another free agent move we saw recently, Brandon Moss goes to Kansas City, and boy, that is a tough place to hit a home run. I was just looking, the home run park factor there by one source was something like 77 for left-handers and 76 for right-handers, where 100 is average. But the flip side of that, two things. One, I believe our own Jeffrey Flanagan did a piece, a StatCast piece, that basically said nearly every home run he hit at home last year would have been out in Kansas City. And he has hit home runs in a place that is as tough to hit home runs as Kansas City, which is Oakland. So, you know, on the one hand, I think it's always worth remembering that park factors do matter. On the other hand, this may be the rare guy that's a little more impervious to that than some. How highly do you rank Moss now that he goes from St. Louis to Kansas City?
Yeah, to me, not much changes because he spent most of his career on teams with pitcher-friendly parks and has hit for power. So this is kind of more of the same for him. And as you said, park factors really matter. But when we're thinking fantasy baseball, the way park factors really matter is when the park factor changes for a player, when he goes to a hitter-friendly park or a pitcher-friendly park, and we got to have to assess now the impact and the difference. With Moss, there isn't, and St. Louis isn't a great place to hit home runs, even though the Cardinals do a lot of it. It's not regarded as it's not a Miller Park or a Coors Field or something like that. So, you know, I do expect them to platoon him. I think he'll kind of be what he has been, a low average, 25 home runs, 70, I could see 70, 75 RBIs because he won't play against left-handers that much. And he's their DH. He replaces Morales. I think he'll hit in the middle of the lineup. He'd be really nice in a league with daily transactions where you can put him in every time they're facing a right-handed starter and then take him out when they're facing a lefty.
So given that set of numbers, how highly do you rate him, especially coming off a season where he hit 225?
Yeah, and really struggled late in the season. I think in a 10-team league, I don't really care if I own him or not. Like, I would take him at the end maybe for my bench and to mix in and out of my lineup depending on what their upcoming schedule looks like. But if he was on waivers, like, I wouldn't feel like I had to go out and get him. I think in a 12-team league, he's fine as kind of your utility guy or your last hitter, that kind of thing. And then if you go deeper than that, a 15-team league, I think he's just like, then you just plug him and let him go. And you get your 25 homers. He hurts your batting average. He doesn't hurt it as much as some people would expect because it'll probably be over 440 or 450 at-bats instead of 550. But in a 15-team league, there's value there. In a 10-team league, I think it's pretty marginal, and I think it goes week to week with him.
And speaking of low average sluggers, we go left on the map west. Luis Valbuena is now an Angel. He's coming off a pretty nice partial year. Year before that, Lil looked kind of moss-like, 25 home runs and a 224 average with the Astros the year before that. Another guy going from, well, this guy going from a good place to hit to a tough place to hit. First of all, Valbuena on your radar in anything other than an AL-only league?
They said they're going to play him against right-handers, which I was a little surprised about that they were going to give. If they actually give him all the starts against right-handers, then I could see 20 home runs maybe, and then maybe a barely useful guy in a 15-team league. To me, the big impact here, two things. One, it makes me worry about how much the Angels might be worried about Albert Pujols and his availability for opening day. And then the other one is, if they're going to use Valbuena this much, does that make C.J. Cron someone you just don't draft in any mixed leagues? Because I think it might. And he was kind of an interesting guy prior to this signing.
It's interesting that you frame it in terms of Pujols, because I hadn't thought of that. Because when I see that, what I wonder is C.J. Cron going to get traded? I mean, that's my first thought, because you've got Marte, you've got Pujols, and now you've got Valbuena. That's a whole lot of guys who really, I mean, Valbuena can play elsewhere, but I don't think at this point he's going to play a significant amount of time anywhere but first in DH. So my first thought is Cron on the way somewhere? And suddenly he becomes awfully intriguing if he gets, first of all, freed from Anaheim, unless he goes to Tampa Bay, which is not a great place to hit. But, you know, if he gets sent somewhere, he becomes pretty intriguing freed from Anaheim. But, yeah, I think it's you almost can't draft him right now because there's just not a role for him.
Yeah, I mean, if you drafted this early, I guess you could pick him in the last round and just hope that he's on another team at some point. I thought about the trade possibility when the signing happened. And it's totally possible, and we don't know what discussions they've had. But then I started thinking, and I thought, you know, the first base market right now,
yeah,
I'm just not sure why they would sign Valbuena thinking they could get much for Crone, because you could have got Brandon Moss pretty cheap. Apparently you can get Chris Carter right now at a very reasonable price, and Mike Napoli's still out there. And with those free agents still lingering out there, it's hard to think that there's a team that would give up a solid prospect or something like that, or a solid pitcher to get Crone when they could just sign Carter. That's what started making me think, well, if they're not going to trade Crone, is it possible that they're worried that Pujols won't be ready for opening day and they just want to cover themselves? I didn't downgrade Pujols much at all, or maybe not even a little bit in my rankings, but it's something to keep an eye on.
And look, at this point, I think you just have to go into any season with Albert Pujols with the awareness that he's high risk, and you know, nobody's going to be shocked if he runs into 40 home runs this year, but his health history at this point, to me, makes him high risk and just not a guy I would want to count on, which kills me to say, because, you know, I watched him for 10 years. Is the one thing you could say about him was you could count on him. But, you know, at this point, to my personal view on Pujols is you have to bake in a lot of risk, because I think to some extent he's got permanent health issues. I mean, his foot issues, it doesn't seem they're going to go away. And so it's a question of how successfully they manage him, how much time he needs to miss, how often he's compromised. But, you know, I sort of have a hunch that you may never see Albert Pujols really fully pain-free and clear again.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and I look at his time. He's been with the Angels for 5 seasons. He had the 1 year where he only played 99 games. The other 4 seasons, he was basically a 600 at-bat player. I can't predict 600 at-bats for this season. I'm feeling like a safe projection is you start around 540, recognizing that you could get the 600, but you could also get a 400 like you got from him in 2013. And then, you know, I feel like 540 is kind of you're not quite in the middle, but a little bit in the middle on that. I think that's where you have to view him. And then that means 26, 27 home runs, 95 RBIs. Totally good in the middle of rounds of your draft, but I'm not looking for another 30-something home runs and 110 RBIs or something like that.
But the other issue here, and this is again one of those things where I probably think too much, but you know, part of the problem is you kind of almost wish Pujols would miss some games. You kind of almost wish, and this, again, I'm basing this partly on the guy that, you know, I covered for several years, but, you know, I sometimes wonder, and I certainly wondered this towards the end of his time in St. Louis, I often feel like if this guy would just take a week or just take a DL stint rather than trying to play through it, you know, you almost wish, as a fantasy player, I think there's a case to be made that you'd rather have Pujols be in that good or hurt category than playing through stuff all the time and struggling for long stretches in ways that he never did when he was younger. It's not so much to me that you have to bake in time missed, though I think you do. It's that you have to bake in that if he is playing, there's a pretty good chance at any given time he's compromised because he refuses to take time off.
It's true, and maybe he'll be too stubborn going forward to do that still, but the shorter DL stints that we're going to see this season...
Yeah, that's a good point.
...is maybe with some... I think we'll see that more with some veterans like Pujols. Maybe it won't be him in particular, but some of the veterans where they just... The team looks at the schedule and maybe says, okay, maybe this is a time for that nagging whatever injury you have right now. A little 10-day break, and it'll just be the 10-day minimum, and then for us fantasy owners, you see it, you get them out of your lineup, you put them in your DL slot or on your bench, and you can go forward with, and especially in the shallower leagues, the 10 and 12 team leagues, like you can find someone pretty easily to cover that absence.
You know, maybe in particular a guy like that, hey, you know, we've got 2 series in NL Parks this week, you know, something like that. That's a strategy question, and from a big picture that we're going to need to discuss one of these weeks. I think that's a really interesting issue. We had one, actually, I thought pretty intriguing trade since the last time we talked. Logan Forsythe goes to the Dodgers. They essentially get a discount Brian Dozier, and Jose De Leon goes to the Rays, which to me is every bit as interesting a part of that deal. How much do you like Forsythe getting out of a rough place to hit and going into a good lineup, but also coming off of, again, what you can make a pretty good case was his career year?
Yeah, I have a little bit of durability concerns with Forsythe, but not enough to really impact my draft day perspective on him. I like him a little bit more than I did when he was with the Rays. I mean, he's going to hit, assuming he hits leadoff, which seems quite likely, he's going to hit after the pitcher now, which isn't great, a change for him. But I do think he could score 90 runs with the Dodgers and maybe even 95 or 98 or something like that if he's healthy. I don't think he'll really run more. I still don't see a double-digit steals total. So for me, in a like in a 10-team league, he's kind of a, I wouldn't say he's a late-round guy, but later. Like he's someone, could be your middle infielder, but maybe not your second baseman, that kind of thing. I kind of feel like Forsythe is solid, but I really doubt that he's going to take his game to another level and be spectacular. Do you think I'm selling him short at all?
No, I'm fairly conservative on him. That the number you talk about sometimes, that home runs plus steals. Mm-hmm. What number do you like from there? Is 20 a good number?
I was going to say 25 and maybe even just a little over that. So I'm thinking like 18 home runs, 19 home runs, and then you know a steals total that doesn't get to 10, but is 7 or 8, something like that, maybe even 9. He's not clearly not a great base stealer. He was 6 for 12 last year. Yeah, I could see 7 or 8 steals and maybe 18 home runs, so about 25 in total.
I would be pretty happy with that. I think if you give me that number, yeah, I'm pretty happy with him as a starting middle infield guy. I'm a little conservative. It's the same thing with Trumbo. I don't think last year was a fluke. I do think it might have been his career year.
It's possible. I mean, like when I look at his stats though from 2015, his OPS was a little bit higher actually in 2015. Now he didn't have the DL stint, but that doesn't affect obviously your OPS, right. But it does affect your just ability to stay on a roll throughout the season. I wonder if he's just settling into kind of this is what Logan Forsythe is. Yeah. He's got a little bit of pop. His average is okay. I don't see another level. If there's anything exciting about him, it's the possibility that hitting in front of, depending on how they set up their lineup, if they went like Seager, Turner, Gonzalez right behind him, you know, could he score 90-something runs? That's what interests me.
And then the other half of that, De Leon goes to the Rays, and even with all the moves they have made, as usual, they have a ridiculous wealth of starting pitching. They now have De Leon and Honeywell both not currently in the rotation and probably ticketed for AAA to start the season. Is there one of those two guys that you would have your eye on to draft and stash, thinking that he could have a significant impact this season?
Yeah, I'm interested in doing a draft and stash with De Leon. I mean, I heard some negative things after this trade about him, just in the sense of, you know, why would the Dodgers give him up? Maybe they had soured on him a bit. And then people talking about how he had poor success in, like, a really, really brief stint in the majors, which doesn't, to me, change anything. Like, 17 innings last year doesn't change anything with how I think of him. But his numbers in AAA last year were amazing, and scouts love him. And, you know, it's a pitcher. I know it's the AL East, but it's going to be a pitcher-friendly park. I think he is a draft and stash. I even think it's possible that he comes out of spring training with a rotation spot. But just kind of looking ahead, like a lower-budget team like the Rays, it probably makes sense to kind of delay that service time a little bit, start him off in AAA, and then go from there, especially because they do have options.
Yep. And then one move that apparently isn't going to happen after we talked about it and talked about it and talked about it. The Mets are apparently not only going to hold on to Jay Bruce, but are going to play him. And you know, those weren't both assumed. You know, they said a little while ago, yeah, we're probably not going to play him. Or, excuse me, we're probably not going to trade him. Now, more recently, they said he's basically going to be an everyday player. I mean, I guess that's kind of what you have to do. That's how it works. You got a guy with that kind of seniority, you trade it for him, you play him. But Michael Conforto just off your radar entirely until something changes?
I think he has to be. I could honestly see him opening the season in AAA, which is really surprising. But, I mean, it's probably not good for his – assuming everyone's healthy, it's probably not good for his development to sit on the bench all the time. And I think, as you said, I think they have to play Bruce. They have to play him because he's kind of earned that, because he hit 33 home runs last season, drove in 99 runs. Like, he struggled with the Mets, but overall last season his numbers are fine. And, you know, and have to play Granderson, and they certainly have to play Cespedes. So, and they have Lagares to be a nice fourth outfielder for them, you know, good defender. So I could see Conforto going to AAA. In an NL-only league, I would draft him and then just see what happens. In a mixed league, I wouldn't, and I'd just be waiting, you know, keep my eye out for that Mets outfielder goes on the DL, and then I'd be ready to pounce on him, because he could be someone who goes from AAA, if that's where he ends up, you know, straight into a starting role whenever he gets brought up to the majors. And, you know, I could still see Bruce getting traded, even though they said that they don't see it happening. But I think we have to take them at their word right now, especially with that market being flush for power hitters still, that I guess they looked around and just couldn't find anything.
All right, well, that's the Fantasy 411 for this week. We will be talking to you again next week. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk.